Copyright 1973 by Sonia Moore.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. This is the first lecture demonstration of the new series on the Stanislavski system, presented by the American Center for Stanislavski Theater Art. It is obvious to everyone that an orchestra or a ballet company cannot be assembled without professionally trained and skilled musicians and dancers. Talented boys and girls play an instrument or dance and sing for their admiring parents. They would not dare audition for a position in an orchestra or a ballet company without adequate skills. But in our theater, boys and girls are often cast because they look the part. It is easy to detect lack of professionalism in other arts. Few people will say that they know or understand music, but practically everyone volunteers his expert opinion about theater. To face the crisis in our theater and to deal with the root of the problem, the training of talented young people in the Stanislavski professional acting technique, the American Center for Stanislavski Theater Art has been founded in New York City. For years, we have been engaged in research of Stanislavski's teachings, in his own writings, and in the works of Russian theater experts who devote their time to the study and analysis of his teachings. This new series of lectures presented by the American Center will include our new data. The objective of the Stanislavski Center is to raise the American theater to a professional and artistic level, to teach the amateurs in our community theaters art and dignity on stage, and to teach the audience appreciation of theater art. As a part of the American Center's program, a Stanislavski workshop was conducted at Lost Battalion Hall in Queens under the auspices of the Recreation and Cultural Affairs Administration of New York City. We intend to have more Stanislavski system workshops in our recreation centers. Assisted by New York State Council on the Arts, the AXTA One Repertory Company of the American Center, composed of actors trained in Stanislavski's conclusive technique, the method of physical actions, is now in its third season. The AXTA One repertory includes plays by O'Neill, Chekhov, Pirandello, Strindberg, and Baraka, formerly Leroy Jones. Next season, we plan to premiere a new play by a young American playwright. Our audiences include numerous groups of college and high school students with whom we have discussions after performances, and senior citizens. AXTA One also toured the underprivileged areas of New York City under the auspices of the Mayor's Office of Neighborhood Government. But some people may wonder, why Stanislavski? Why not train our actors in other methods? There is an important answer. Stanislavski alone developed rules for the actor's creative state on stage. There is no other systematized acting technique but the Stanislavski system. Work on speech, diction, training of the body and the voice is only the beginning of the future actor's training and is obligatory. There is only one psychological acting technique, which is as basic and vital for actors and directors as the theory and technique of music is to musicians. No serious worker in the theater can bypass this theory and technique of theater art, the Stanislavski system. In the past, other great men of letters, such as Lessing, Diderot, and Goethe, and such actors as Talma, Rossi, Salvini, and Coquelin, attempted to discover laws for an actor's creativity on stage. They all failed, and we have only their opinions on whether the actor should or should not live true emotions on stage. Stanislavski alone determined with astonishing precision the specific peculiarities of theater art. Any creative process demands great concentration of the spiritual forces of the artist. The fact that the actor creates before his audience makes a tremendous demand on his willpower. Stanislavski determined conditions in which the creative process of the actor takes place. He realized that the actor is the creator, the material, and the instrument, all in one. Stanislavski alone solved the contradictions between the actor creator and the actor as the character of a play. And he alone developed a harmonious acting technique. It is the vital technique of the incomparable and fascinating art of living authentic experiences on stage. It was Stanislavski who brought the Russian theater to its high artistic level. Its high level of directorial and acting art is based on Stanislavski's discoveries and on his aesthetic and ethical principles. Stanislavski's reform embraced all the facets of the theater: dramatic literature, music, architecture, and painting. When Stanislavski began introducing his system, only the Moscow Art Theater and its studios were using it. Now all the 500 professional theaters throughout Russia use it. In Russia, the system is taught in opera and ballet schools simultaneously with the students' physical disciplines. The theater can raise people's cultural level, but it can also corrupt people and spoil their taste. Stanislavski calls for enlightenment through spectacle. There are people who hear only noise in the performance of a symphony, but we still perform symphonies. The theater, too, should not adjust to such people and produce plays which assure box office success only. The theater must lead the masses, not adjust to them. Through the creation of high-level art, the Stanislavski system contributes to the moral and aesthetic education of the people. To serve the theater at such a high level, actors must be educated. But Stanislavski, who gives the actor the most important place in the theater, imposes on him great responsibility. He subordinates creative and professional tasks to ethical demands. Actors, said Stanislavski, must strive to contribute to society. They must respect each other and respect one another's interests. Ethics are the foundation of Stanislavski's aesthetics and are indivisible from his methodology. Before Stanislavski discovered the laws for an actor's creative state, they were manifested in the creativity of such geniuses as Salvini, Eleonora Duse, Maria Ermolova, Fyodor Shalapin. Watching them, Stanislavski became aware that the actor who achieves the natural, lifelike state and lives true emotions has the greatest possibility of influencing his audience and stirring their reciprocal experiences. Stanislavski began by studying the functioning of a human being in life. He turned for help to psychologists and soon learned that we function in life spontaneously without participation of our will through laws of nature. Let me give you examples of some laws of nature. For instance, while I speak and you are listening, you are also thinking. There is a continuous chain of thought going through the human mind. We stop thinking when we are dead. This is a law of nature, and the system includes a technique which enables the actor to think on stage as a character. If the actor stops thinking as the character is dead. Another law of nature on which the Stanislavski system is based is the continuous film of images in our mind while we speak or while we listen. We are not aware of it, but we see images of people, places, and events when we mention them, or hear other people mentioning them. Let me prove this law of nature to you. Think of this morning. What state was your room in when you left it? Did you make your bed? Did you wash your breakfast dishes? Do you realize that you saw images of what you heard me mention? This happens in life spontaneously through a law of nature. The Stanislavski system teaches the actor to transform his own life's images into the images of the character he portrays. If the actor ignores images, he violates a law of nature, and the character he portrays is dead. And there are other laws of nature. Stanislavski searched to discover the essence of the creative process and to create laws which would permit the actor to consciously control his apparatus of experiencing and of embodying. While studying the human being in life and in the process of developing his system, Stanislavski met with great difficulty in the evocation of the actor's emotions. Stanislavski learned that there are in us inner mechanisms which we control and others which we cannot control. Emotional reactions belong to an inner mechanism which is not subordinated to the control of our will. Emotions often surge even against our will. Emotions respond only when what happens concerns our personal interests. On stage, such a stimulus does not exist. An actor cannot order his emotions and love or hate, rejoice or suffer as Hamlet must suffer because his uncle killed his father and his mother married the murderer. Closely watching the performances of some geniuses, Stanislavski realized that though emotions are not under the actor's control, these geniuses do live authentic emotions when they are inspired. This seemed a miracle in which only geniuses succeeded against any logic in achieving. Other actors, the non-geniuses, were unable to achieve this miracle, can do nothing other than to try to imitate emotions. This led to the theater of representation. The Comédie Française of Paris is a fine example of such art. The actors impress with their magnificent speech and beautiful movements, but they only illustrate the text, demonstrating the external form only. The contemporary audience wants to see more than that on stage, and this manner of acting, antiquated today, will not tell about man and will not reveal life's phenomena. Stanislavski began his search for the key which would intentionally turn on the inner mechanism responsible for our emotional reactions. He began his famous search for conscious means towards the subconscious. During his untiring work, Stanislavski developed and experimented with various means. There was a stage when he worked on a means he called relaxation of muscles. At that stage, Stanislavski believed that relaxation alone was sufficient to bring the actor into the functioning, creative state on stage. He developed special exercises, but was finally disappointed. Relaxation on stage is most important. But relaxation alone is not sufficient, Stanislavski concluded, and he moved forward in his study of the human being in life. At one stage, Stanislavski thought that the correct tempo rhythm, his term for the speed of the movement and the intensity of the experience, would alone bring the actor into the creative state. He was later disappointed. But it is still most important that the actor control the tempo rhythm, which is a bridge between inner experience and external behavior on stage. But alone, it is not sufficient, concluded Stanislavski. And so it was with other separate techniques with which Stanislavski experimented. The more the creator of the system learned about the human being in life, the more his system progressed. Stanislavski was establishing, demolishing, and establishing again. A few years before the end of his life, in 1935, Stanislavski made his greatest discovery about human behavior being a psychophysical process. On the basis of this discovery, he developed a technique which he called the method of physical actions. Stanislavski's new technique made a revolution in the use of his own means and was a valuable contribution in the field of neurophysiology. Today, it is the basis of studies in all drama schools in Russia. Since the rules developed by Stanislavski are based on objective natural laws, they can never be dated. It is also obvious that the system is not a Russian phenomenon. These laws are universal, the same for all people, in all countries and in all times. Therefore, the rules developed by Stanislavski are obligatory for all actors. It is the richness of the spiritual content, expressed in a laconic artistic form, that makes the work of art. To understand the work by Leonardo da Vinci, we do not have to know the Italian language. To understand the work by Beethoven, we do not have to know the German language. The spiritual content, or as Stanislavski called it, the life of a human spirit, must be embodied to make it seen, heard, and clear to the audience. Stanislavski was merciless in his demand for excellence in voice, speech, and body. An actor with a defective speech, an untrained voice or body, will never be able to convey the subtle nuances of inner life, just as a pianist will be unable to play a sonata on a broken, out-of-tune piano. Stanislavski's demand for profound truth, simplicity, and naturalness is often given the wrong interpretation. Some actors are not interested in building characters and are satisfied with being themselves. Stanislavski, who thought that there is no theater if the actor does not merge with the character, was fighting this new cliché, playing naturalness, which appeared also in Russia at the early stage of the formation of the system, among actors who did not understand Stanislavski. Nemirovich Danchenko, the great Russian director and the co-founder of the Moscow Art Theater, said, quote, "Simplicity may become insolence," unquote. To be natural, in Stanislavski terms, means to function on stage through laws of nature in the character's circumstances. True, the actor's personality is his material, but it does not mean the actor should always play himself, or rather his own clichés, and go on stage without having studied and chosen the character's psychological and physical behavior. Besides the laws which bring the actor into the creative state on stage, Stanislavski offers an entirely concrete technique of work on a role. With its help, the actor creates a live human being with his unique inner world. Reincarnation is the highest step in the actor's art, and it is the goal of the Stanislavski system. It is achieved when the actor thinks, experiences, and acts as the character. When the actor is capable of transforming the elements of his own organic nature into the inner world of the character. The art of living on stage may create exciting experiences for the audience. Authentic experiences on stage make theater an incomparable art and create true participation of the audience. Such theater art leads to a multifaceted revelation of human personality. The audience must see the close-up of a man. It is the inner world of man, his life, his mentality, his relations with the world surrounding him that are of importance in the theater. The director must be able to use expressively music, sets, colors, lights, costume, but these should be assisting the atmosphere and the expression of the inner state of the actor, not be of primary importance. The theater, where a single actor is the center of attention, is not art. It is the same as if there were only one good musician in an orchestra. Theater is a collective art, and it cannot depend on one person. The system teaches ensemble acting from the first steps of the future actor studies. An ensemble is not formed just because a group of actors had the good fortune of working together for a number of years. An ensemble is the continuous, mutual, purposeful behavior of all the actors striving together to disclose the main idea of the play. The ensemble is violated when actors do not have common technique. They interfere instead of helping each other. An ensemble is possible only when actors are friends and use the same technique. Often used Stanislavski terms, conscious and subconscious, mean only controlled and uncontrolled. The actor's work is entirely conscious. The system is conscious activity at its height. However, this conscious activity is not the goal, but the means to creativity on stage. After the actor consciously prepares the score of his role, he may have on stage spontaneous actions, unexpected even by himself. Such moments are subconscious creativity, when the actor improvises, though his text and the pattern of his role are firmly fixed. This subconscious creativity or improvisational state due to inspiration is the goal of the Stanislavski school of acting. All Stanislavski's searchings were directed towards finding the means to harness the phenomenon of inspiration and giving the actor conscious control over it. But as Tchaikovsky said, quote, inspiration is a guest that does not like to visit lazy people, unquote. Inspiration is the result of hard conscious work, not the stimulus to work. Stanislavski himself was a brilliant actor, and his portrayals, such as Astrov in Uncle Vanya, Vershinin in The Three Sisters, and Gayev in The Cherry Orchard, are considered the best in Russian theater. Here is what Meyerhold, the celebrated director and forefather of all avant-garde theater, said, quote, Stanislavski is an actor with hands that handle the rapier masterfully, with a healthy and agile body, with voice of enormous range, with a face that overwhelms with its expressiveness, without any makeup, with love for rich theatrical costume, with a penchant for Shakespeare, Molière, Pushkin, and Schiller, unquote. Stanislavski, said Meyerhold, is called to incarnate what Pushkin called the truth of passions and the masks of exaggeration. This was true also of Stanislavski's directing. It is a mistake to consider Stanislavski only a naturalistic director and his system right only for naturalistic productions. His system is not a series of rules for staging a naturalistic play or any play. It goes beyond one theatrical direction. Stanislavski was a brilliant director with superior ability for bold, vivid portrayals, profound subtlety and grace. Stanislavski demanded that productions be in full tone, with vivid speech, vivid creativity on stage. He wanted the spectators to comprehend the inner essence through the artistic form. He demanded that actors live the experiences of the characters every time anew and in an artistic form. He believed that if the director finds the deep psychological content and sharp conflicts, he will find the vivid and the right form to express it. It is the content of the dramatic work that decides the form and the style of a production. But the actor must exist organically on stage. He is not someone, sometime, somewhere, said Stanislavski, but I, here, now, today. A performance staged by the director and performed by the actors has a firmly fixed score. But as the performance of a symphony will differ at each concert, though the conductor works from the same score, so every night will the score of the actors sound different. All this will be possible if there is truth, sincerity, and depth in the actor's performance. All actors, professional and amateur, must be capable of this. To be capable of organic behavior on stage is much more difficult than to repeat some crude theatrical cliches. But organic truth is the road to art in the theater, where crude cliches are death to art. We must develop artistic taste in professionals and in amateurs. They must learn that art on stage demands disciplined behavior, that there is no place on stage for unfounded self-confidence based on grimacing and cliches. We have in the United States many young, talented people who want to work in the theater. Mastery of the professional technique will make them artists, and they will move our theater to an artistic level where there will be unity of content and form, unity of the psychological and the physical in the actor character, where every nuance on stage, every intonation, gesture, and blocking will have unity of the internal and external. We can and we should experiment further, but to neglect the legacy, to neglect traditions, precludes creation of any serious art. We must remember that only art at its highest level contributes to the growth of society and to spiritual communication among people. This has been the first lecture presented by the American Center for Stanislavski Theater Art. We shall proceed with the explanation of the Stanislavski system in our next lecture. If you have any questions, please write to me, Sonia Moore Lectures, care of WNYC FM, New York, New York, 10007. Thank you for being with us.